Yay! Podcasting them softly, Art of the Dead. The series goes on. And today we've got a big double header. The first of which is huge. I was stunned that he wasn't part of the original interviews, but we won't go into whose mistakes were made. But we've got him now. We've got the fiendish, the feisty, the opulent Freddy Krueger of horror movies. He is Dorian Wilde, played by my guest, Danny Tesla. Welcome to Podcasting Them Softly.
No, thanks for having me. Thanks for reaching out.
That's awesome. Awesome. And it's nice to have a familiar accent on the end of my line today.
Yeah, I was born in Sydney, grew up in Queensland and the Gold Coast and Brisbane, and then moved back to Sydney.
Right.
And, yeah.
That's great. And now you live in Las Vegas now, is that right?
Yeah, it's been a strange journey. I moved to Singapore for 10 years. I had an entertainment company over there and would do corporate shows.
Right.
Then I won the green card lottery and finally thought, oh, great, I can go to America and get into films. So I moved to LA and, I was thought the big battle was getting the green card, and actually there's a lot more to it. When you arrive, you've got to have credit, you've got to be in the equity, the union, the SAG, and, you know, all the different things that they have here. So it was, and plus that expression of there's a million people in LA trying to break into the business, that's a literal number. There really is a million people there that are either writers, directors, producers, actors, and it's, you just realize that to get in the door, it's almost impossible. Like, you'd send out 100 emails and get no reply.
Yeah.
Because there's so many people all trying to get in that door. So I literally lived in LA for 2 years and never got in the door. So I never got to go for an audition. I was there for 2 years, just struggling financially, because it's a very expensive place to live as well.
Right.
So I decided to move to Vegas because most of my background has been in theater. So I thought, well, I can go and probably sing and dance in a show in Las Vegas, and it's much cheaper to live in Vegas. And then when I got here, I actually found not only was the lifestyle fantastic, with the cost of living, but there's actually a lot of opportunities here, and I've been working nonstop, so it's been good.
That's great. From Sydney to Singapore to Sin City. That's a fantastic journey, my friend. Fantastic journey. There's a movie there.
Yeah.
I see.
Well, I mean, if I become big, people will be interested, but right now, no, I don't really care.
No.
But, yeah.
Well, we could give you a different name. We could give you a different name.
Well, actually, Danny Tesla is a different name. When I came to America, I realized nothing I'd done before in Australia or overseas had meant anything as far as, you know, I was in Greece during a spectacular in Australia, and you probably remember that with, the first version had Craig McLaughlin, Danny Minogue, Anthony Waller, all these big-name stars, and
we went
around the country for 5 months doing stadiums.
But over here,
if you say Greece the Arena Spectacular, they're just going to go, oh, you're in a musical Greece, probably a musical theater society kind of version or something, not realizing that all these things that, you know, being in the Olympic opening ceremony and all this other stuff was huge, but over here it doesn't mean anything. So I thought, I'm starting from scratch. I might as well start with another name, because my real name is Daniel Thompson. It's a very common name. There's thousands of them online on Facebook, YouTube. But if you Google Danny Tesla, I'm one of, like, only a few. So, I chose Tesla because I was working on a piece about Nikola Tesla in LA. Someone was trying to develop a new musical, and they had me doing all the recording. So the more I learned about how incredible Nikola Tesla was, I thought, that's a inspirational name if I'm going to pick a name. So it's like I've been reborn in a way by having a new name over here in America.
That's awesome.
New space name.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I had to change my name because I could never get any peace and quiet.
Really?
Yeah. I had to change my name.
What was your...
My original name was Elvis Aaron Presley, and I changed it to Kent Hill.
There you go.
Yeah. I traded away the fortune and fame and cut my hair and changed my name. Because
everyone in Vegas is wondering where you're at.
I know. Now you know. I've been living like JD.
Yeah.
I've been living like JD Salinger all these years. Well, that's really great, Danny, because we kind of covered the first question off the bat, the sort of story so far. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself. So
right.
I'll just tick that because we've done that one. Okay, very good. So let's talk about Art of the Dead. How did Art of the Dead find you, or did you find it?
I found it by a very random bunch of things. I had a friend that I was doing a show called Evil Dead the Musical here in Las Vegas, and she was having trouble because she was an Australian, but didn't have the full paperwork, so she couldn't work, so they bumped her out of Evil Dead, and she didn't have any work, and she was trying to get enough money to get her papers for the green card, so I had her be a personal assistant for me.
Yeah.
Long story short, she introduced me to a bunch of different things online, including a whole bunch of Facebook groups for actors in Las Vegas, and I saw the audition for it, and I also saw that they were screening their previous movie. The same producers were screening their previous movie, Bus Party to Hell. So I thought, well, I'll check out their movie, see what that's about, and see if I'm interested in going for Out of the Dead.
Right.
Because I'd read the breakdowns of the script, and they had the father part, which I thought, well, I'm probably the right age for the father part. They said they wanted him in the 40s, and I didn't even look at Dorian Wilde because they wanted him to be 35, and I thought, oh, I'm probably too old for that, so I won't look at that. And I went to this screening, watched Party Bus, and the guy sitting next to me was another actor, and he was very excited that he was going to be auditioning for the part of Dorian Wilde, and he kept telling me how great this part was. So on the day, I thought maybe I should go and have a look at the that part that I was talking about. And when I read it, immediately I read the breakdown for it. It said it was that scene where he says that's what it was like back in the 1890s, and he talks about Jack the Ripper,
and
I just thought, okay, so this is 1890s London. I'll do a British accent. I sort of figured out how I would play it, and then went in 15 minutes before the end of the audition day. They had just an open call from 9 to 5, and I walked in at 4:45, did the scene, and then one of the producers, Michael Mahal, was there, and he said, "Wow, that's the best we've seen." And I thought, "Oh, that's a good sign." And then they gave it to Lucas Hassel. I saw on a casting list they had the cast, and Dorian Wilde was going to be played by Lucas Hassel. So I thought, "Oh, I haven't got it." So yeah. I wrote to the producer and said, which is really random. I just wrote and said, I see that you've already cast Lucas Hassel as Dorian Wilde. If anything happens, if he pulls out or changes, I'm still interested, and maybe you should have someone that's not as pretty boy as Lucas Hassel playing Dorian, because you want the audience to not like him and to be a struggling artist. So, funny enough, Lucas actually turned down Dorian because he just played a bad guy in The Black Room. So he decided he wanted to play the father.
Right.
So then they offered me the role again. So, not again, but for the first time, they said I've got the role. So, yeah.
That's great.
So that's how it happened. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, so I've got this question burning in my back pocket. The first time you moved to LA, right? I personally have never been. But
okay.
The first time you moved to LA, is it true like you see celebrities? It's not uncommon to see a celebrity somewhere at some point.
Yeah, I used to take a lot of trips to America on holidays and stuff, and some of my trips I saw a ridiculous amount of celebrities.
Yeah.
When my grandmother passed, she left me and my brothers $5,000 each, and I immediately spent that $5,000 on a trip to LA and New York. And in LA, I've been working for Disney in Australia, so I thought I might see one of the Disney people having this Disney premiere for Hunchback, and they had this red carpet, and I was just standing on the other side of the ropes, and the celebrities started going past, I was looking for my friend, and then one of the guys said, do you want to go in? I think you just put this sticker on and you can get in. So I went. I was underdressed, but I just bought a suit on Hollywood Boulevard. So I went in. The security, I guess they didn't know whether I was just dressing down as some of these celebrities do. So I went in, got changed in my suit. I had the sticker on, got changed in my suit, went in there, and it was like they had all the Baywatch stars, Home Improvement stars. I mean, back then it was all the celebrities of that time. And I asked the guy why he let me in. I thanked him. He just said, I wanted to speak to someone real. You know, I'm a distributor in Europe, and all I ever meet is these actors, and I just wanted to meet someone real. So tell me, what do you do? And I was like, I'm an actor. And he's like, enjoy the party. And then when I went to New York, I had the same sort of thing. I was just standing on the other side of some ropes watching. I didn't know why everyone was crowded around this theater. And this guy was pacing back and forth, and I was standing beside this lady he was looking at, and kept making signals to. I said, what's going on? And she said, well, he's only got one ticket, and he wants me to go in with him. So he came over, and I said, I'll buy the ticket from you for $20. And he said, I just want to give it a bit more time. So he went back, talked to security, came back, gave me the ticket. I went to give him some money, and he said, no, it's fine. Walked off with his girlfriend. It was the Tony Awards.
Right.
So now I went into the Tony Awards, and there's Andrew Lloyd Webber, Liza Minnelli, Nathan Lane, Gregory Hines, all these people I've been watching for years from Australia from a distance, and they're all in one spot. Right. And that was what was so surprising to me, is that these people all know each other. They all go to the same parties. They all go to the same award ceremonies and events, and they know each other. And it's just so strange, because we see them from Australia as individual celebrities doing their own work, but then they're actually all in one place, and it just blew my mind. So, but when I was living in LA, I would see occasionally. I never had any experiences that intense unless I went to something specifically entertainment related.
Like, you never accidentally bumped into Nicolas Cage getting a cup of coffee or something?
Well, I did bump into Ed Norton. It wasn't a bump in. I was actually having to, like I was saying, I was struggling in LA, so I did some Uber driving.
Right.
And I picked him up from the airport.
That's fantastic.
So,
that's fantastic. Well, that's almost a whole other interview. What did he say?
I'm a big fan, and he's a fantastic actor. Been watching his films for 20 years. What's that?
Did he talk? Did he tell you something?
Yeah, well, he didn't really want... I asked him at first, I said, what kind of music do you want? He said, I'm about to talk to my agent, so I'll get you to turn it down. So he was talking on the phone to his agent, and I turned the phone down, and he didn't sound very happy with the meeting that he just had from... He'd just come in from San Francisco, and he was like, yeah, they're interested in me, but I got these other projects. I don't really care if it happens. And I said, oh, he's not really... He's a bit down. Maybe he's just having a bad day.
Yeah.
And then, so I turned the music down. He asked if his phone went flat. So, I didn't have the right charger for his phone. So, his mobile's off. We're stuck in traffic in Santa Monica, and he's, the music's off. So, I thought, if I'm going to say anything to him, now is the moment.
Right.
But I just want to say, I love your work. And there was this long pause. He's staring out the window, and he just went, thanks. And then another long pause went by, and I said, and hope to work with you one day. And there's another long pause. He's staring out the window and went, thanks. And I thought, okay, he doesn't want to talk. So we drove to Malibu, where I was dropping him at a friend's place. He said, my friend said it's just past this blue light. So we passed the blue light, and he said, it's the tall one. And I said, the tall one? And he went, the tall one. And then I look around and turn to him and say, the tall one? And he screamed at me, it's the tall one. He got really angry, and it was like he was turning into the Hulk. It was, what he meant was, these were all one-story houses along the beach. This was a second-story house. So
that's
what he meant by the tall one. But he got really angry, and he got out of the car, and I said, I wish you all the best. And he calmed down a bit, went you too. And I drove off, and I just thought, wow, I'm happier as an Uber driver than he is as a multi-million-dollar award-winning actor that's, you know, got two major films up for Oscars right now. Yeah. At that time, that was a few years back when he had a couple of movies, the Birdman and the one with Michael Keaton. And yeah, so I was just like, wow, he's... And then I asked some friends that know him in L.A. I said, was he having a bad day? And they were like, no. He's sometimes like that.
Wow.
So, which is that whole thing. Be careful of meeting your heroes because you might be disappointed.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I mean, I think he's a great, he's an incredible actor. No one can deny he's the most amazing actor. But I guess the stories about him being difficult sometimes to work with and all that, that sort of made a bit more sense after meeting him.
Right. Yeah. Danny, that's incredible. There's another movie right there. Wow. That's incredible. I'm going to steal that story and make a movie out of it. No, that's cool. That's great. So all I need to do is to move to LA and become an Uber driver, and I'll be...
there you go.
There. That's
yeah.
Yeah, I'll just...
I drove a few people, but some of them I didn't actually know who they were, but their friend that they were with would tell me how they were a big star on American Idol or something.
Right. That's happened to me... It's happened to me twice in my life. The first time, oddly enough, and you're going to laugh at this one, the first time, oddly enough, was with Shaquille O'Neal. I was in the Brisbane International Airport in the toilet, and this big dude comes, walks, stands beside me, he's taking a leak. And I look up at his face, not down like a lot of people ask. I do not know how big Shaq's penis is, all right? I do not know. I did not look at his penis. I looked up at his face. And for the life of me, I knew who he was. I knew he was Shaquille O'Neal. But do you think I could say that? I'm trying to say, I could have just said Shaq, right? Yeah, but I couldn't. I'm thinking Shaquille. Say Shaquille. Say Shaquille. And I'm like, g'day. You know.
Well, it's not the most appropriate moment when you're...
We're both taking a leak. And it's funny, man,
because
the stellar moment of the whole story that everyone loves is we're now walking out of the bathroom together. He walks out first. I walk out behind him. And my friends see me, and, like, Shaq's heading off to wherever he was going. And I'm walking over to my friends, and they're going, holy shit, you just come out of the toilet with Shaquille O'Neal. I'm just like, oh, fucking. And I yelled out, literally, to Shaquille O'Neal. I said, hey, Shaquille O'Neal. And he's just like, that's me, brother, and kept on walking.
Yeah, he must be used to that.
I didn't see his penis.
Yeah, I had a similar thing when I met George Lucas, I couldn't speak.
You met George Lucas?
It was actually in Sydney, of all places. This is when he was scouting the studios before he started to make the prequels. But no one really knew who he was because they didn't have all the DVDs with behind-the-scenes footage. But because I'm such a fan, I knew what he looked like. So he was able to walk up George Street. I was actually just having lunch with a couple of friends, and we'd said at lunch as a fun game, who would you want to meet if you could meet your top five people? And George Lucas was number one on my list. So it was so random to be again in Australia. And George walks past, and I said to my friends, I got to go. And they're like, what's happening? I said, I can't explain. I got to go. I'll talk to you later. And then I followed him into a bookstore. He was with his now wife. And they walked in, and they just parted like they'd done this before. They went off their own separate ways. And I walked alongside him, and I looked at him, and I went, hello, Mr. Lucas. And he looked at me like, he went, hi. And he's like, he didn't want to be disturbed. And then I went to say, thank you for introducing me to Joseph Campbell. And as soon as I was about to say that, I realized he knew Joseph and met with him. What if he wants to have a deep discussion about his work? I've only read one of his books.
Right.
So I went, thank you. And he kept walking. And then I rang up my brother and I said, you wouldn't believe it, George Lucas is in the bookstore. Well, what should I do? And he goes, just leave him alone. I'm like, okay.
Oh,
so now
no.
I'm talking around the book, so just what?
I couldn't have. I know he would have been pissed off, but I would have had to. I'd have to talk to him. I mean, shit, he'd be one of
the... Yeah, well, I mean, no one knew who he was back then, so he was able to be in the bookstore, and I think one guy came over and shook his hand, that was about it. And I kept thinking in my head, what am I going to... What could I say to him? What could I... Should I... You know, I had a million things, but the one thing I got from it was someone... He was a very short guy, and I was thinking so much has come from this tiny guy.
Yeah.
You know, not only with all the Star Wars and Indiana Jones, but just all the companies that he's formed and all the things he's done. And I just couldn't believe how what a giving person he is, because someone like him could have just literally put their feet up and sat back and done nothing, and yet he keeps giving us these. I mean, basically, filmmaking has changed completely because of him. Now it's all gone digital.
Yeah.
Anyone can make movies because of him. I mean, he's really a pioneer in the digital. Filmmaking world, so
so chances are, Danny, you enjoyed the trailer the other day.
The trailer?
Yeah.
My God, yes. Well, it was so good to hear Mark Hamill's voice again. I mean, knowing he's going to be back, that was so disappointing. Not having the trio get together and be on the screen together.
Yeah,
I've got a few friends that are in their 20s and they didn't grow up with Star Wars, so I try and explain to them what it's like. And the best way I can explain it to them, as I said, imagine 20 years from now or 30 years from now, Harry Potter is coming back, and they're going to bring Harry and Hermione and Ron. They're all going to be back on screen. You go to the movie, you're super excited. It's been 30 years since you've seen and you grew up with these guys, and then suddenly they kill Ron in the first movie, and then the second movie they kill Harry, and then in real life the girl that's playing Hermione dies, and you never get to see them all together.
Right.
I said, how pissed would you be? That's how we felt.
Right,
that's
right.
How we were feeling.
Yeah.
You know, they just see the Star Wars films as, you know, new films that they're enjoying, and, you know, they don't realize that that was so special to us. To me, that's what, I loved all the lightsabers and vehicles and everything, but to me it was about those three friends that went up against the evil and the Empire and won. You know, that was what was special to me about Star Wars. Was that?
That's it. I openly wept. I think I'm going to cry. I think I'm going to cry a lot. I think I'm going to cry really loud. I don't know if I can go to the cinema, but I have to. But I'm going to cry. I'm a loud crier, Danny. I'm a loud crier.
Yeah.
And I think I might be crying. The trailer had me weeping. And I'm not going to talk about
it. Yeah, I have goosebumps.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about the bit that made me cry. You know which, you know what part it is.
Right.
Yeah, but let's get on with we better do some Art of the Dead stuff. We've talked enough about Star Wars. We could do a whole show on Star Wars. We might actually do
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
When you've got free time, when you've got free time again, we'll do a whole chat about Star Wars. But anyway, let's talk about Art of the Dead with Dorian Wilde. And Dorian Wilde, absolutely delicious character. Villains are the best guys to play. They are the most fun. This is part of our continuing series, Danny. We've been doing 7 Deadly Questions. Are you ready to play 7 Deadly Questions?
Oh, okay.
Okay, they're questions. They're questions based on the 7 deadly sins, because Art of the Dead is playing with the 7 deadly sins. I personally thought that Art of the Dead, which I absolutely love, is really this great combination of the Portrait of Dorian Gray meets The Exorcist meets 7. Brilliant thing. Now we have Danny Tesla, Dorian Wilde, playing 7 deadly questions. Danny, first question. Did you feel lost on the set of Art for the Dead?
Did I feel lost?
Yes.
Lost? In what way? How do you mean?
The catering was really good.
Oh!
And you lusted after more of it. Nothing rude. Oh, nothing.
Lust.
I mean.
Lust.
Yeah, lust.
Oh, I thought you said lust. Yes, lust. Did I feel lust on Art of the Dead? Yes, I definitely felt lust. There were some beautiful women in the cast.
Right.
And I believe you spoke to one of them yesterday.
I did. Jessica's a very wonderful lady. And stunning.
Yeah.
Just stunning. Just stunning.
Yeah, I got to when one of the breaks, I got to we were there for obviously late nights and hours. They go for sometimes 12 hours or more. And so when you're not shooting, you just try. You have to be very quiet because we're all in the same house. So it's not like you can go off to a trailer and make noise or do phone calls or whatever. So we all have to just be very quiet. And because we've been doing long hours for days, you know, a lot of us would just lie around. So she was curled up sleeping on one of the double beds, and I curled up in the other corner. So that's about as good as it gets for the left side of things. Nothing happened, of course. But,
it's about art. It's about art and sin. Come on in. All right, gluttony. Gluttony.
Okay. Gluttony. What could I say about? I guess a gluttony would be wanting to have more takes and more screen time.
Right. And are you guilty of that? Are you guilty of that on Art of the Dead? No. Yes. Maybe.
No. We did like one or two takes. I mean, most of the times for me, they did a lot on some of the other parts of the film. But for me, it was sort of just Ralph was like, I've got it, moving on. So I did a lot of waiting around, and then when I finally did get to act, it was pretty quick and moving on to the next bit. So he came up to me in one of the breaks and said, "You're paid to wait." And I said, "Well, I've heard the term hurry up and wait, but what do you mean paid to wait?" And he said, "Well, you'd love to act, so you'd act for free. But the waiting, that's the work, so that's why you're paid to wait." I was like, oh, that's a good way to look at it.
I like that. I like that. Okay, yeah. Were you ever greedy at all on the set of Art for the Dead?
Greedy. Like I said, the only thing I would be greedy of is just wanting more time acting.
Okay, cool.
More time doing takes.
Right. Were you lazy, sloth-like on the
lazy
set?
Lazy.
Yeah.
Sloth. Yeah. I mean, in between takes, absolutely. I was pretty much just lied around doing nothing. Couldn't do much at all. So I was pretty lazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Wrath. Did you get vengeance against somebody for, say, I don't know, bringing you your coffee the way you don't like it or something like that?
This is Wrath, isn't it?
Yeah, Wrath.
This is
yeah.
The Wrath one?
Mm-hmm.
Wrath, no, I don't think there was any Wrath. I mean, I did scare some people because I was in character. I didn't, I'm very different to the character, so I didn't want to sway too far away from it. Some people would get creeped out just by me looking at them, and they thought that I was being wrathful just by my presence and the way I was,
yeah,
the aura I was giving off, I guess. But you know, that's to me, that the ones that have been around a lot of movies and things know that what I was doing was just being in character kind of thing. But some of the newbies were a bit thrown by it and got a bit scared sometimes.
Sure. Envious.
Envious. What would I be envious of? I was envious of the house. The house was beautiful.
It looked really cool.
In that house.
It looked really sexy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They rented someone's house I think it was 2 weeks that we were shooting there, and it had a beautiful overlooking all of Las Vegas, the city, and that's the kind of house you could bring anyone back home to. You know, it's gonna work out well for you. It's it's one of those houses that's just. Yeah.
So who owns it? Someone famous, do you think?
No, I've met the guy that owns it. One of the actresses in the movie. I should have had the cast list with me. It's terrible. But her father owns the house. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Must do all right.
Yeah.
I dare say he's not an Uber driver.
He's also got a house in LA. So
yeah,
doing all right.
I dare say he's not an Uber driver. Anyway.
I should never have mentioned that.
Yeah, that's great. Fantastic. Pride.
Pride. Let's see. Pride.
Obviously, you're proud of the movie.
I'm proud of what I did. It was a great thing to be a part of, a great group of people, and it's kind of I'm proud. I can definitely say I'm proud to have been a part of it.
Right, that's cool. And Danny, the last question: what do you believe is the deadliest of the seven deadly sins?
Oh, that's a good one. Deadly as in your life is in imminent danger of dying. Is that what you mean?
What do you think is the worst sin that people indulge in? The deadly. The one with the biggest lure, perhaps.
I'd say gluttony is probably one of the worst things, because when you get into the whole thing of on the bigger scale of the planet we're on and everything, I think gluttony is destroying us all. So.
Right. Very good. Now, in your best Dorian Wild voice, tell the audience where they can see Art for the Dead.
Okay.
Art for the Dead? I've been saying Art for the Dead. Art of the Dead. Sorry. It's early in the morning.
No, it's funny. With the Australian accent, a lot of people couldn't understand. And even doing an English accent, when you say art, people don't... Because they over here in America, they go art.
Art.
So
fart.
They find it very funny when you say art.
Yeah, art. Yes, Art of the Dead, sorry. Yeah, but they say art like fart.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Art of the Dead is... Okay, Dorian Wild, hang on, I gotta try and remember how the character would be. If you want to feel the seven deadly sins in all its glory and witness my genius art, then you can go online and look up Art of the Dead on any of the video on demand platforms. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you soon.
That's fantastic.
How's that?
That's awesome. Danny Tesla, you're a marvel, you're a miracle, I love you, you're a beautiful, powerful man. And audience, do what Danny says, do what Dorian Wild says, do what I say, and go see Art of the Dead wherever you can get it. My guest, the wonderful, the man from Sydney to Singapore to Sin City, he pissed off Edward Norton once. And
I burnt my bridge there.
Oh, mate, you're a dead set legend. I dare say Edward Norton no longer remembers. He has no memory for Uber drivers, least of all their names.
It's not going to affect his career.
I doubt it. But it's a heck of a cool story. It's like the time I met Chuck Norris.
Yeah?
No, I didn't really. I really want to meet Chuck Norris, though, but... Yeah, I'm sorry, it always gets people going. They say, it's not the time I met Chuck Norris. Like, you met Chuck Norris? I'm like, nah, but I want to.
Yeah,
my big ambition is Nicolas Cage still. If I can bump into Nicolas Cage, I don't need a meeting or a dinner or... I don't even want to work with him on a film. I just want to be, like, stuck in an elevator with him or... Maybe be his Uber driver.
Well, he's in Vegas. That's where he lives.
Oh, that's fantastic.
In Las Vegas. So.
Have you seen him?
Yeah, a lot of friends have seen him. He lives in an area called Summerlin, and a lot of my friends have seen him.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
He goes to the shops.
Hey, do you have a guest room in your house?
Yes, I do.
Would you like a guest?
Absolutely, man. You can come over anytime, I can't guarantee you we'll see Nick Cage, but
we can stalk him a little bit. or at least wait, like we can stake out the house, and when he goes out to get food, he's got to eat. So I mean, when he goes out to dinner or something, we can tail him for a while. And until the cops pull us over, and we can say that we're making a documentary about Vegas at night. I got it all figured out, Danny. But listen, thank you for being on Podcast of Softly. Art of the Dead, check it out. It's got my very good friend Danny Tesla and a Dorian Wild, the maniacal, fiendishly maniacal artist who has managed to live by trading his soul so that he lives on through his art. Danny Tesla, marvelous performance. Great film, Art of the Dead.
Thanks.
This has been Podcasting Softly. Thank you.